What is that when you jump around and carry on and do the who dat stuff?
Who dat? You know, that's really kind of a fan. You know, that's our chant.
Duncan Holder podcast back at you. Larry Holder, Jeff Duncan here on the Athletics Podcast Network. Of course, many ways you can listen, share your podcast that we do each and every week here on The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder. You can jump on there, subscribe, and I've been told that there is a significant deal on subscription if you go through the podcast. So jump on that. TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder. Of course, you get all of our pods and everything having to do with The Athletic, whether it's Saints, whether it's the San Jose Sharks, whether it's Liverpool, you want any of it, we have it all at TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder. Or you can listen to us, subscribe through Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a million. The Duncan Holder podcast here on the Athletics Podcast Network. Well, Jeff, taking on the Bucks again. I put in the lead to my cheat sheet and projections and prognostications. This is the way. It's almost like I'm going Star Wars nerd and going The Mandalorian. This is the way. You knew this is the way. They're going to have to, of course, beat Tom Brady and the Bucks for a third time. And there's a reason why the NFL has put it in its prime slot on Sunday. This matchup is huge. You're actually already seeing even Tom Brady and Drew Brees have fun with it with the History Channel photo, which I thought it looked more like David Letterman versus Paul Schaefer, but that's just me, the way they looked. But Jeff, we all knew something like this, it was going to be showdown again against one of the all-time greats, whether it be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. And guess what? We're seeing it, and this is certainly going to be the most intriguing matchup in NFC divisional weekend and NFL divisional weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's the NFC's kind of top-heavy this year, Larry, so it really felt like the three best teams. I guess you could throw Seattle in top four, but you knew the Saints were going to be there, and the way the Bucks have been playing lately, it was kind of inevitable. And look, we got a marquee matchup. Like you said, it's the prime game on Fox for the weekend. You have two of the game's greatest players in history with Brady and Brees. You're going to hear about that all week. You're going to hear the cliche about you can't beat a team, good team three times in a season, which is really a myth. Actually, it's very easy to do. It happens more often than it doesn't. So we can talk about that. But I do think it adds intrigue in that the Bucks played so bad in that last game. It wasn't like the Saints won a couple of games by field goals. I mean, they just destroyed the Bucks, and that had to be embarrassing for them. Now, how does that translate to this weekend? Does motivation play into this? I mean, the Saints are going to be motivated. So I think there is a storyline there with how that game played out and why was it so lopsided. Are the Saints just that much better? Was it just their night? And I'm sure it's not going to be that easy on Sunday.
Yeah, and let's just start with the – I'm glad you called it a myth because I've been trying to tell people that it's – just some myth. It's hard to beat any team once. So I don't understand this thing. Okay, yeah, I know they're familiar opponents, and it's rare that you play a team three times in the first place because that means both teams are making the playoffs. And so we've seen the Saints do this already in recent history against a team that I felt like they matched up well with, and that was Carolina in the 2017 playoffs. They beat them three times. Jeff, you and me have talked about this a lot, where we feel like the Saints match up well against Tampa. And so we're not just haphazardly, if you decide, all right, let's pick the Saints over the Bucks again. This isn't just some, oh, well, we live in New Orleans. No, when you go through and if you want to check out my cheat sheet and projections, I mean, it's basically on steroids this week, thanks to Pro Football Reference having their approximate values out for the 2020 season. That's a cool added element that I was able to put into this week's cheat sheet to kind of show how close these teams are. But still, when you look at it matchup to matchup, I still feel like even if the Bucks play better, which I'm with you, they're definitely going to play better, I still feel like the Saints, they have an advantage in a lot of these matchups that they're going to be seeing on Sunday.
I think they're better across both lines, and we can get into some of the details there with the Bucks' offensive line. Looks like they're going to be missing Alex Kappa. He's a very good player. Last time they were missing Ali Marpet, who's probably their best offensive lineman, and the Saints took advantage of that. He's back, so there's a little bit of a trade-off there, but I still feel like the depth of the Saints' defensive line, the strength of their offensive line, outweighs anything that Tampa Bay has. And then the other strength that I really think gets overlooked, and no one's going to really come out and say it publicly leading up to the game, but I think the Saints have a huge advantage in coaching. I just do. I think their staff is better than Tampa's staff, and I think they'll just undress them X's and O's wise when they get into the game. I think it'll come down to that, and I just have a lot of confidence in the Saints coaching staff putting together a successful game plan during the week, and then their better talent going out and executing. I know that sounds pretty boring, but that is what I think will happen. In all this talk about the intangibles and the motivation and the embarrassment of last time aren't going to matter when it comes down to lining up against somebody opposite you and executing. And I think the Saints know what's at stake, so motivation isn't going to be an issue. And it's just a shame that they don't have a significant home field advantage in this game.
And last I checked, Jeff, coaching's pretty important. So it might sound boring, but it's slightly important, as in, like, massively important. And I feel like in both matchups, you know, the Saints did a better job in coaching. And you and me have known Sean Payton and a lot of these people on his staff for years and years. And this is what they live for, to out-scheme and out-coach people. And they've done this a lot, even through a lot of the issues that they've had with personnel being in and out of the lineup. And yet, look, let's shift over to the quarterback talk. Oldest quarterback pair to ever face off in the NFL playoffs. And, you know, when you look at the way Tom Brady's playing and you look at the way Drew Brees is playing, they're playing different styles. I'm talking way different. I mean, Tom Brady is seemingly hell-bent to push the ball down the field. Drew Brees is definitely one who will take what's there. And if there's a shot play, maybe he'll take it. But they have no problem putting together drives and eating up clock. And, you know, it's hard to, when I did my matchups and cheat sheet, it's hard to say, okay, well, one quarterback is doing it the right way and the other one's not, because both have been productive. And ever since we've seen the Bucks lose badly to the Saints, you know, Tom Brady's kind of gotten into a little bit more of a rhythm, especially pushing the football down the field. So, you know, it is certainly a contrasting style we're going to see on Sunday.
I think a real key to this game, Larry, is going to be how it's called. You know, we know the Saints' reputation defensively for holding, grabbing, getting away with some downfield contact. Other coaches have mentioned that before and after games against the Saints, and we've seen it manifest itself in the number of pass interference penalties and holding calls they get against them. They're among the leaders in the league. I know for a long time they were leading the league. And that's a strategy that the Saints employ defensively. Last week, the officials pretty much let them play. You know, they didn't. I don't think the Saints got called for any pass interference calls that I can remember. There were a couple late ones on the Bears down at the goal line where they were outflanked and they just grabbed the guy to keep a touch, prevent a touchdown. But I thought the officiating crew allowed a lot of holding, not only in the secondary on both sides, but also up front. There weren't really any holding calls by either line. And we don't know the crew yet, but whoever gets this game, that's going to be a key part of how this game is played, because if the Saints are allowed to be physical, I think it's a huge advantage for them. And if they start getting called quickly for these tic-tac, you know, downfield, you know, physicality that they have, then it could be a long day, or it could be, you know, at least a fourth quarter game. I think that's going to be a key part of how the Saints, or how successful they are defending the Bucks.
And when you look at Tampa Bay, obviously they know the Saints' style. I mean, this isn't a secret. You know, we're going to assume that Marshawn Lattimore is going to be around Mike Evans a lot. Of course, Chris Godwin, he's certainly a weapon. But, Jeff, one thing we have to look at, too, is that Antonio Brown, he was only making his first appearance for Tampa the last time they played. And while he's still option number three, his production has jumped. And when you look at Rob Gronkowski, a lot of times they've been using him as a blocker just to kind of help protect Tom Brady. And, you know, so that's allowed someone like Cameron Brate to get more involved. He got more involved against Washington. But when you look at the players who are defending those guys for the Saints, I think the Saints have to have a lot of confidence. Obviously, we've seen Lattimore be able to slow down Mike Evans. Janoris Jenkins is certainly a capable player. And we're not talking about an Eli Apple or a Ken Crawley or someone else where you're thinking, oh my gosh, you're going to go after him. Jenkins can certainly hold his own. C.J. Gardner-Johnson can defend, whether it's in a slot or a tight end. I like the way DeMario Davis can do this. You know, Malcolm Jenkins has not struggled mightily in coverage. So when you map all of that out, you think, well, the Saints have a good advantage. And then when you look at it on the other side, Jeff, it's not like the Bucs secondary scares the hell out of me. I think they're susceptible there. And I think the Saints, you look at both of those sides, I would say advantage Saints on either one of the sides.
Yeah, I agree. I think defensively for the Saints, it's just going to come down to who's going to make the play, because the ball's going to be in the air. And there's going to be a lot of one-on-one matchups. The Saints are not going to change what they're doing at this stage. They've been playing a lot of what we call two-man coverage, which is two deep safeties with Malcolm Jenkins and Marcus Williams deep. And then underneath coverage, man-to-man. And that's been a real strength. They found the formula there defensively. And I think that's what we're going to see a lot of. Now, they'll switch it up. They'll change, drop into a zone here and there, and they'll play straight man with a single safety every once in a while. But for the most part, that's been the base defense and base coverage for the Saints, and I don't expect it to change any. I think Antonio Brown does add an element. That was his first game back, if I recall,
yes,
in Week 9. And he's playing much better, and he's a dynamic weapon. And I think he's going to have a big role in this game that the Saints really didn't have to factor in early on. And you're right, Gronkowski's, I think, stabilize their pass protection. The fact that they're going downfield more, Brady needs to have more time, and that five-man protection unit was not holding up. Now you add Gronkowski as like a sixth lineman, and it's opened things up for them, giving him time. And it's gonna come down to that. Can the Saints pressure Brady? We know when he moves off his mark, he's not nearly as effective. He's a lot like Matt Ryan that way, and the Saints have always been successful with Ryan, and they've been successful against him. He's thrown 5 of his 12 interceptions this season against the Saints in 2 games. And I don't know if that's going to happen again, but it certainly has to be in Brady's head. And is he going to continue to be that aggressive? I really believe in this game, you know, looking at Drew Brees, I think he's going to continue to be the way he's been all year. He's going to be conservative. He's going to take what the defense gives him and move the ball in these little bites. Every once in a while, they're going to get a 30, 40-yard play. But for the most part, it's going to be move the chains, control the clock. What's Brady going to do? Is he going to continue to be aggressive, knowing that the Saints kind of, have his number? I think that's going to be a big part of how this game plays out.
And when you look back at the protection issues the last couple of games with Saints and Tampa, one key matchup helped the Saints tremendously, and that was Trey Hendrickson versus Donovan Smith. Donovan Smith, he is still one of the most porous pass blockers in the NFL. They've tried to help him out more because Tristan Wirfs, the rookie, he's been able to kind of hold his own, but the missing element might be Trey Hendrickson. He didn't play against the Bears. I'm curious to see how that neck is going to respond. I'm not extremely confident that he's going to be able to play this week. And if you don't have Trey Hendrickson, and he feasted on Donovan Smith. Not having Trey Hendrickson is significant. And we saw last week, it's not like the Saints got a ton of pass rush help from, say, Carl Granderson, or of course Marcus Davenport's can play a ton. So, you know, if you eliminate that element, maybe that gives Brady a tick longer and could help the Bucs. So that's something we're going to absolutely have to monitor. And if Hendrickson can't play, do the Saints maybe mix up some of the things they do in blitzing and these sort of things? And so that's, you know, that is something that you're going to have to circle and watch extremely closely as the week moves on, the injury report, and as we get to game day.
And didn't you feel like the Saints missed Hendrickson last week? I didn't think their pass rush was nearly as effective
Agreed.
As it is when he's out there,
Agreed.
Right?
Absolutely.
It didn't feel like they really got after Trubisky very much. Maybe when I rewatch the film again, I'll see it. But Hendrickson adds an element there just with his sheer effort. And you're right. I mean, Donovan Smith's really never stood out to me against the Saints. I mean, Cam Jordan had his way with them and Hendrickson as well. And it's going to be huge in the game if the Saints can get pressure on Brady, move him off his mark. Because if he has time back there the way Trubisky had some time, he's going to pick them apart. They just have too good of players at on the perimeter. This is not, you know, Allen Robinson and Cole Kmet and that group. I mean, this is easily the best perimeter group the Saints have faced in some time. But I would say this, you know, one thing I was looking at, you know, the Bucs clearly are playing better since when the Saints played them earlier. But their end-of-season schedule that they did this against, Larry, was pretty weak. I mean, I'm not sure how much you can read into their winning six of their last eight games since the Saints game when their wins came against Carolina Panthers, the Minnesota Vikings, the Falcons twice, who didn't even have a head coach, the Detroit Lions, who didn't have a head coach, and then the Washington Redskins, who were basically in a full-blown transition year and had a losing season. There's not a lot of winners there. And the two teams they played with winning records, the Rams and Chiefs, they lost both those games. Now, they played them competitively, but they were both at home, and they lost both those games. So I'm kind of with you. I think their overall talent might be a little overrated sometimes, and the results don't add up to the hype they're getting right now.
And Washington gave them all they could handle with Taylor Heinicke. I mean, right. If Taylor Heinicke could do this, and it's not like that Washington ran the football all that well in that game. I would favor the ground attack for the Saints, Kamara and the Saints offensive line, and Breeze and their pass catchers over what Washington would give. And so that's certainly something, a really good point to look at it. But, you know, I do think, though, that getting into a rhythm is still getting into a rhythm. You know, that the fact that the Bucs won a bunch of games going into the playoffs, you know, I felt like that's what the Saints needed to do, too. And the fact that the Saints, though, won against Chicago it's hard to say comfortable fashion because it wasn't comfortable in the first half. But when they started playing the way you want them to play in the second half, very good defense. They ate up half the clock on two drives and put together two touchdowns, and that was like a vice grip. And so if they could do that against other teams, that's a winning formula. There's no doubt about it. But let me pivot back actually, Jeff, to the offensive line, because I'm talking about in that matchup, Trey Hendrickson might be out. And you mentioned earlier, Alex Kappa, that he might be out. And I think that's something that you look at if the Tampa wants to try to run the ball, that might be an issue, at least to that side of the line. Look, I feel like getting Malcolm Brown back has been a plus for the Saints. Obviously, we saw him shut down David Montgomery, and that's part of him being in there. You having Sheldon Rankins healthy and active, David Onyemata being an active force in there. So when you start looking, all right, you could take one piece away, but you can't forget if Tampa's down a piece, and it might just cancel each other out a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like the Saints' defensive line has just been this steady force all year, with the exception of the Eagles game, where they really didn't bring it. Uh, they they've been dominant almost every game. And I thought Sheldon Rankins had a really good game against the Bears. He showed up a number of times during the game. And he's come on now, along with, you mentioned, Onyemata, and having Malcolm Brown back. This is the deepest defensive line in the league. They may not have, like, one guy at this stage that is, you know, Aaron Donald, but they go eight or nine deep. I mean, they're having to deactivate good players. Malcolm Roach, I think, was not active last week. Shy Tuttle was up. And that, you know, I guarantee you right now Malcolm Roach could play and start for a lot of teams in this league. That's how deep the Saints are. And I think that's going to end up being the difference. I think the Saints will eventually get to them. It reminds me sometimes, Larry, of what we see from an SEC team where they wear you down, and in the fourth quarter they just kind of punish you physically. That's what we saw the Saints do with their offensive line, I thought, against the Bears. By the fourth quarter, I mean, they were basically getting 4 or 5 yards of run on first down, and that just sets everything up. And the Saints, with that defensive line rotation and the fact that the offense controls the ball so much, they're just so fresh. It's a huge factor for the Saints down the stretch in these games, and I think it's going to bode well for them in this game, because I really do think the Saints, while they are better, I don't think we're going to see anything close to what we saw the first two times. I think this game is going to go to the fourth quarter, and I like the Saints' chances in that fourth quarter because of what we're talking about, their strength along both lines.
Yeah, I would agree in that. And then also, you look at in week 9, when we're talking about that, that was Michael Thomas's first game back after almost a half a season layoff. And it's not like he was a major factor in that game. And I feel like him and Drew Brees have had some time to kind of work back out together. And, of course, we saw him catch a touchdown and then a deep ball against the Bears. And look, if they need to go to their bread and butter and just go Michael Thomas slant, Michael Thomas curl, this, that, and the other, I think they could certainly do that. And they've done that in the past. And then you throw in another added element with, like, Deontay Harris. And, you know, you're seeing Adam Troutman get in mixed. And, look, Emmanuel Sanders, he's still there. Jared Cook, I just feel like the weapons on that side, I mean, Drew Brees threw 4 touchdowns the last time they played. I don't know if he's going to throw 4 this time. But still, I still think that they can take advantage of, if they can hold off up front, and even slow down, say, Devin White, who is back. He missed the last 2 games. He was on the COVID list. And slow down him and Levante David. If they just give Drew a little bit of time to find an opening, that secondary, whether it's corners or safeties, I feel like he can pick them apart. He has, and I feel like that he could do it again.
And the Bucs apparently, Larry, aren't blitzing as much as they were earlier in the season under Todd Bowles. And I think that probably will be more effective for them against the Saints. I know when I was working on the Peyton Breeze book, talking to Chase Daniel, he had an interesting comment. He said if he were a defensive coordinator against the Saints, he would never blitz them. He said it's the worst thing you can do because Breeze is so effective at identifying it early, getting the right protection called, and then going to the open player or the one-on-one. He thinks it's a recipe for disaster, and that has happened before when we've seen the Saints play the Bucs, where they get blitz happy and they end up exposed in coverage downfield. So we'll see if that carries over on Sunday, if they play a little more conservatively there. And then that will make it, I think, a red zone game, right? Like, both teams can move the ball. They get into the red zone. And we know the Bears' defense was one of the best in the league, and the Saints really did kind of struggle. They punched some in, but that last drive especially, they really struggled to get it in the end zone there. They, you know, I guess a gaffe by Breeze is the only thing that prevented it, but they struggled to punch it in. Is that going to be a case in this game? Are the Saints going to be able to score touchdowns once they get down there? Because I really believe they will get down there a number of times, and that has been a strength all season, at least the second half of the season. Sean Payton's called so many creative plays in the red zone. They've been able to add that Taysom Hill element and the run game package at quarterback. But who's going to score touchdowns? Who's going to settle for field goals? And we haven't talked yet. I know you probably have that on the agenda. The Will Lutz factor also has to be considered.
Yeah, before we get there, I will give you an uplifting Saints fans stat on the blitz between Drew Brees and Tom Brady. Drew Brees against the blitz this year, 8 touchdowns, 1 pick, quarterback rating of 122.6. That's second in the league, I think, only to Patrick Mahomes. And then Tom Brady, 9 touchdowns, 5 picks, 88.3 passer rating. So to that point, Drew Brees welcomes the blitz. Tom Brady can be affected by the blitz. But there's no doubt that people are wondering what's up with Will Lutz. There's no question. And he's probably wondering what's up with Will Lutz. And because he's been so consistent for so many years now. I mean, I joke, when you're watching a game and they kick a field goal, you can get up and go to the bathroom and go get something to drink or a hot dog or something because you figure he's going to make the kick, whether it's an extra point or just a field goal. And so, you know, the fact that he has been erratic lately is an issue. And I'm wondering, you know, we know Sean Payton has been loyal to Will Lutz, but, I mean, how much does he decide, oh, let's go kicker carousel again? I mean, he brings in Blair Walsh. I mean, you're not bringing him in here just to kind of sit around. I'm sure they're going to want him to kick and see what he has, and because it changes everything. I mean, I think we saw some strategy changes against the Bears. You know, you're not as confident putting Lutz out there. You have to go for it on 4th and 6 or something, you know, at like the 38 of either the Bucks or the Bears. And so, you know, this is a big factor, and we know how razor thin close these playoff games can get, Jeff.
And it feels like, Larry, he's missing them the same way. He's pushing them right each time. It's the same miss each time. And I think that is a technique and, you know, goes back to his approach. What is he doing there? I'm sure they're looking at that on tape. They've been looking at it on tape. But I think what happens when you're a head coach and your kicker starts missing, suddenly it starts getting in your head. You have a lack of confidence. And you're right. You end up going for it in the 40-yard range when you normally would trot him out there, especially in the Superdome where he can get it easily, has range into the high 50s. We've seen him make 57 yarders in there pretty easily. But at the end of this game, if it comes down to a field goal, if I'm a Saints fan, I'm going to want Will Lutz to have made a kick or two during this game to have some confidence if it comes down to him having to win the game with his right leg because he's been so shaky. I think he's missed I think he's 4-4 his last 9 overall.
Right.
And, you know, we were used to this guy being automatic, especially within 45 yards. But he is seemingly striking the ball well. It's just the same miss. It goes to the right of the goalpost every time.
Yeah, except there was the one that flew far left.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I don't know what that was either. I said that.
It looked like one of my golf shots, I said.
It reminded me of poor Garrett Hartley when it was over for him, the ball was helicoptering the other way. I was like, oh, that's not good. But it's the same. But that's the same kind of mindset. It's like Garrett Hartley's made so many good kicks for you. Will Lutz has made so many good kicks for you. What do you do? It's and you know the psyche of kickers. I mean, that's a reason why that's a story. So if you're a Saints fan, just hope it doesn't come down to a kick or an extra point or something like that. But it's that is definitely something that people are going to be gnawing on their fingernails instead of assuming that he's going to make it. So, all right, Jeff, we only have a couple more minutes. I'm going to push you into a pick now. I've already made mine publicly on Tuesday morning in my Outlook and cheat sheet. I have Saints 31, Bucks 24. So I don't think it's going to come down to a field goal, but it could be something where maybe the Saints take a lead and they've got to hold the lead, or maybe they score a touchdown and win it. But yeah, I do think that the Saints will win this game 31-24.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't want to, you know, just copy your pick, but it feels about that type of scoring wise, and also think that type of margin. I think Mike Thomas is going to have a big game. I think he's due a breakout game. I know the Bucks like their matchup with Carlton Davis against him. Carlton Davis played him really well in the opener, if you remember, and he's not been playing that well in the second half of the season. People have been able to pick on him, and I think the Saints are going to go right after him if he matches up man-to-man. So I expect Mike Thomas and also, surprise, surprise, Alvin Kamara to have a big day. I think the Saints' offense is going to be more aggressive early in this game to try and establish an early lead. And I just did just find this out, Larry, that Sean Hockley is the referee in this game. Now, there's good news, bad news on that. He's only called as a referee two games for Saints games the last 2 years. One was, drum roll please, the Raiders game, where if you remember, the Saints had a zillion penalties in that game. And I think it was 10 penalties, and it was just ugly, right? But the other game he called was last year against the Colts when Drew Brees, I think, had set a record for completions, and the Saints just blew out the Colts, and it was kind of an easy game. So looking at his numbers, he's not really a flag-happy guy, so I think that's a good sign for the Saints. So that bolsters my pick of the Saints.
Last thing we need is for a penalty to ruin this game, and the last thing we need is for Tom Brady to end Drew Brees' career. We have not even talked about that. And I may have just jinxed this, and everyone's going to hate me forever. So that's okay, but we'll take the heat. But all right, that's going to wrap up this edition of the Duncan Holder podcast. Of course, theathletic.com/Duncan Holder. You can get on there, subscribe, and get all of our great coverage of everything to do with The Athletic New Orleans and every other market in the country and across the globe. Theathletic.com/Duncan Holder. Also, you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a million for the Duncan Holder podcast. So for Jeff Duncan, I'm Larry Holder. Thanks for joining us once again on the Duncan Holder podcast. And we'll either be talking about the NFC Championship game next week or what was potentially the end of an era.